Have you ever felt deep in your bones, right towards the end of Thanksgiving dinner, that sense of anxious excitement? That sense that you know that that delicious turkey dinner and that incredible homemade pie and whipped cream and whatever delicious other Thanksgiving delicacy was made for you is all coming to an end. And you knew that weeks ago, all of this was coming, being set into motion for you. And you come to that Thanksgiving dinner and you look around the table and you know that this comes to an end. So you take it slowly and you eat. And you know that something is about to be change in our world, right? There's that moment, that feeling. And as the last plates and dishes are washed and put away, the Christmas lights are flipped on, right? And I know this for several reasons, because every mall I go into and at my house, the Christmas Carol playlist, and every restaurant, and I know because the gas station right around the corner through the little speaker plays Christmas hymns. The Christmas lights of the world are turned on right after that Thanksgiving meal. And I know this because there are blocks in Highlands Ranch where it turns all of a sudden from like dark and you know winter's here to like winter wonderlands, right? And you're like, what weird place do I live in, right? And so you have Christmas lights and all throughout our world, the Christmas lights are being turned on and the smells in the air, the Christmas pine and the spices and the cinnamon are all like elevated and our own preparations in our homes, right? And it's all so good. And it's all so much fun. But there's a couple other things that are set into motion when that light is flashed on. There's all the Christmas cards to get out and the Christmas letters to write and the Christmas parties to prepare for and the gifts to buy. And not only do you got to buy them, but you got to wrap them. And there is the light of Christmas has been turned on. And there's a couple other things that happen. And all this would be perfectly good and awesome and meaningful if you didn't have a job. And so then you have to deal with work deadlines and everything to patch together so that you can finally breathe in this moment and enjoy Christmas. And so all of us, in all of our life, the Christmas lights have been turned on, and we jump with this nervous excitement of what this season could mean to us. And you all are here, which tells me that you understand that all of that frenzy, all that fun, all those activities that we do that are good and that are meaningful, but you all understand that there is a story underneath that story. There is a story of all stories, the birth of Jesus that gives us the energy, the meaning behind why we do all that stuff, why we would want to prepare good food and why we want to give gifts to people. There is a story. We call it the birth of Jesus, the incarnation. We call it the moment where God took on human shape and form. And this is that story underneath all that fun and all that frenzy that we call Christmas. And you've come here, I'm assuming, to say, I don't want to miss the story. I love all that stuff. All that stuff is fun and meaningful, but I have come today to make sure I don't miss the meaning of all meaning, that I don't lose sight in all my frenzy activity, the peace, the hope, the joy, and the love of Christmas time. And so there's this deep sense that you just don't want to live the story. You want to connect with that Christmas story. And you don't just want to connect with it. You want to embody it. You want it to be a part of everything you do, because you've been through those years where you've missed the story, where you fell exhausted, tired, and you said, I didn't get to enjoy anything of this incredible Christmas story. But not this year. This year, you are going to be the people who embody Christmas. You're going to be the people who don't lose sight of the story of God taking on human form, of teaching us truly what hope and joy and love and peace could mean. And so we're going to talk this next four weeks about what it means to embody. And I love this very simple definition of embody, to provide with a body. Literally to put on display, to express it out of our very being. This is the idea that these ideas in our head become part of our hearts. So to embody means to bring these ideas of hope, peace, love, and joy into our very beings, to live them out amongst one another. And as we embody, we think about this great image that was created just for our time together. We think about birds. And I know, strange one, an image for you, birds, an embodiment. But birds, they're made to have feathers. And these feathers guide them in flight, and it insulates them in the cold, and it protects them from enemies, and it also helps them to communicate with one another. And birds were created for these feathers. And in the same way, human beings are created for these virtues of hope and joy and peace and love. We were created in the image of God to be these very people who exude these virtues on the world. This is what it's all been about. This is why Jesus came in human flesh to teach us these incredible things of being human, the hope, the joy, the peace, and the love. And in that very way, when we embody, we're able to soar as human beings. We're able to be truly what it means to be human. We're able to insulate ourselves, to protect ourselves. And most importantly, when we embody these Christian virtues, these Advent Christmas virtues, we get to communicate to the world this great hope, this great joy, this great love that we have. We're able to remember in the midst of all the fun activities, the story of all stories, the birth of Jesus. And so I wonder if there's ever been a moment in your life where you felt like you really got it, where you felt like you really were able to embody that hope, love, joy, and peace. And I want to tell you just two quick stories. Last year, it was a terribly cold Denver night. And if you know anything about the Fredricksons, it's chaos and randomness all the time at our house. It's always messy. It's always chaotic. And that's just how we roll. And every once in a while, the like clouds part and like the hope and the love and the joy and the peace come down. And so this particular day, it was freezing cold out. And the kids, early on in the day, the kids were arguing and fighting and climbing and biting one another. And Stacy and I were acting up too. And so we kind of did like the Fredrickson huddle every once in a while. Like, okay, pull it back in. We've got to get this together, right? We've got to treat each other with hope and joy and peace and love. And I remember we went outside and we went sledding and there was laughter and there was joy and we were able to kind of break up all that seriousness. And then we had this moment with each other. We were looking outside our front window and it was so cold that our post person, his name is Bob, was like 2 hours late delivering the mail that night. And you could literally see how cold he was, all bundled up, all tucked in. And I remember Irie and Trey looking at each other like, we ought to do something about that. And I remember like as a dad, like I was so teared up, it was like the slow burn reaction. I was like, yeah. And so I had no idea what to do, but I knew it was right. And I said, well, what should we do? And it was so awesome because Irie said, make him hot cocoa. And it was so awesome because Irie just intuitively knew that some hot chocolate would help him. So we made it really quickly and we ran it out in a thermos. And of course, my kids have to run out with me in the freezing cold. And we hand it to him. And just his eyes had this sense of like, wow, thank you for thinking of me. And I was so filled with like this daddy pride that my kids had like gotten the story of Jesus told and given to another person. But this embodying that happens at Christmas of these great virtues, it's for all of us, wherever phase of life we're in, whatever age we're in. This summer, we had a friend who he had decided he was going to drive from California to North Carolina. He was attending Duke, 19 years old, right? And his mom, being the mom, had set up the hotels that he was going to stay at and which miles he was going to drive each day. But this for him was like the best adventure ever. I mean, you're 19, you're driving across the country, right? And so I remember like this insane sense of joy, like in his text to me over the phone, I'm doing it, I'm coming to North Carolina, we're gonna stop in Denver. And so as he drives out here, like there's like update text throughout the whole way, and he just has this like epic 19-year-old journey. Right? Like he meets a girl and she takes him kayaking and then he gets to the hotel at like 3 a.m. but he makes his checkpoint and then he calls us and is like, I went on a hike. I just stopped and there was this random cool hike I went on. Like, Who does that, right? When you're 19 on a road trip. And then he shows up to our house at like 1 a.m. He has no idea that like we have two kids, you know? Like we don't even know what 1 a.m. is anymore. And he's just like telling us these stories. He picked up a homeless man and took him to Utah. And then he fed another homeless man. And you're like, you are living the dream, my friend. Living the dream. And then we told him about Corvus Coffee and how everyone in Denver has to go to Corvus Coffee. He spent 4 hours learning about roasted coffee at Corvus Coffee. And so, but when Stacy and I got home that night, we just started talking about like how awesome it was that at this moment in his life, he could like embody this hope and this joy and this love. And it just oozed out from his being that this was his trip. And I think of story after story, wherever life we're at, we can embody this great hope and joy and peace and love to one another. And at the very end of the day, after the hot cocoa, Irie looked at me as I tucked her into bed. She said, "This has been a good day, Daddy." And I love that. And we can get there as we embody these deep Christian virtues with one another. And so today we're going to look at hope. And then the previous weeks we will look at one after the other, joy, peace, love. And today as we look at hope, we want to sort of think about what we define as hope in our culture. And I think we have two dominant definitions of sort of this worldly hope. And these are not bad things. This is the feeling that we want can be had. Right? That what we want can be had. And then number two, events will turn out for the best. Just these kind of simple ways we talk about hope in our culture. Kind of this American optimism sort of drips from these, right? That, hey, it's going to get better. Just another turn around the corner and things will get better. And that's fine. That's fine. But the Christian story, the Bible invites us to such a deeper and richer experience of what hope could truly mean. And so Sam Wells, the Bible scholar at Duke Divinity School, he says this: the Bible is not so much a script that the church learns and performs as it is a training school that shapes the habits and practices of a community. This community learns to take the right things for granted, and on the basis of this faithfulness, it trusts itself to improvise within its tradition. Improvisation means a community formed in the right habits, trusting itself to embody its tradition in new and often challenging circumstances. And this is exactly what the church is called to do. Now, if you're a theological nerd right now, you're like, yes, yes, that's awesome. You're like, your alarm is like going off inside. But if you're normal, you're like, what, Dale? the point being that we as a community have this awesome privilege together of taking this hope and embodying it for the world at large. And that's what the church does at its very best. It comes together, inspires one another, and it injects into the universe this new sense of what it means to be Christian. And so our storybook for understanding hope comes from the Bible, as Samuel says. And so we look today at two really key passages. We look to the book of Romans today, and we'll move along in different passages. But Romans chapter 5 through 8, it's sort of like, it is the filet mignon of theology in the Bible. It is some of the richest, most beautiful images in Christian theology. And this passage speaks to hope. And it says, "Therefore, since we are justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have obtained access to this grace in which we stand. And we boast in our hope of sharing in the glory of God. And not only that, but we also boast in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. And endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope does not disappoint us, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit that has been given to us." And we're not going to talk about peace, but in this incredible passage, everything that Paul has been talking about in the letter is starting to come together. And Paul talks about this righteousness of God, or being justified by faith. And this is the Greek word dikaiosune. And it's a much more dynamic verb than we understand. So what it means is that at this moment, what the incarnation of Jesus means is that at this moment, the justice of God and the love of God and the righteousness of God is all coming together. It's all coalescing in this moment. It is running over. It's running over in our lives and in our community. Underneath the surface of all the pain and all the suffering and all the heartbreaks we feel, there is the righteousness of God bursting forth, pouring forth the hope in our hearts, pointing us to this future promise and reality that is going to one day be ours. And so we have a sense that feels deeper and richer than just another turn around the corner, doesn't it? That this is the God who is working underneath the surface of our life to bring about justice and peace for all of us. And the second passage I showed you is Romans 8, 18 through 25. And it says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. And then it comes to this conclusion. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for the adoption, the redemption of our bodies. For in hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. And this passage does this unbelievable thing of these labor pains. And if you've ever been to a labor unit with your wife or someone, you're like, wow, right? This is a big deal, guys. And all of a sudden, these labor pains burst forth. And so God is working in this world, and these longing and these labor pains, it's quite beautiful, right? This hope is bursting forth. And so that gets us to say this about Christian hope. It's the future promise that the world is moving towards the day when everything will be redeemed. It's the future promise that everything that has been cracked and broken is going to be mended. And that baby lying in a manger is sort of this sign and symbol that this God is at work doing the mending. This is sort of the first fruits of this incredible restoration and project. This story ends in a beautiful climax with no crying and no tears and everyone filled and filled with God. And so Christian hope has this sense of future to it. It has this sense that all that's in the present is being pulled forward into the future. And all of our lives and all of its aches and pains can trust that on that horizon, we are being pulled forward into the love of God, into this hope that our lives have this great symphony and crescendo in. And so Martin Luther King Jr., at the height of the civil rights movement, he gave a sermon called A Knock at Midnight. And he talked about the embodying hope. And the heart of the sermon, he says that there are people in our world who are longing for this hope. Now, remember, he's at this crucible in American history where everything is about to either go good or go bad, and there's violence and there's pain, and there's this deep separation, right, between this racial casteism between African Americans and between white Americans. And right at this crux is this voice who's calling all of us beyond the us and them, calling us to the we. And he says this at the very end of the sermon. But even in the inevitable moments when all seems hopeless, men and women know that without hope, they cannot really live. And in agonizing desperation, they cry for the bread of hope. And in his beautiful rhetoric right here, right at this moment, he calls us all as a community to embody hope to this world that so desperately needs us. For us to be the people, as you know, and you've watched the news in Ferguson, the biggest problem with Ferguson is the us versus them rhetoric that's tearing us apart as people. And the deep need is for us to be a people of the we, to recognize that it is about all of us coming together to figure out and to solve these problems instead of us versus them. This deep hope that we are to embody in the world. And so, with King's challenge and the challenge of Advent, I want to get really practical as we conclude today. And I want to name three specific ways that we can begin to embody hope. And the first is, every one of us knows those people who are hopeless. Those people who, whether have faced a tragedy or whether just have come time and time again to see that life has not given them what they hoped. And I want to ask you this week for our first one. Christian hope teaches us the world matters, that our lives matter. Would you partner with God this week and bring hope through a word of encouragement or a gift to someone who needs it? Through your gift, you are pointing them to the future hope that they have in Jesus. This small gift is a symbol of the future reality that those Romans verses painted towards. So if this is you, and there's someone that you know in your life, your family member, your next door neighbor, someone who's faced heartbreak, would you share with them a gift and begin the process of embodying hope in your very being? And the second one is Christian hope teaches us that God is redeeming the world. There is no longer an us versus them mentality, but a we. Somehow, the whole future of the world is caught up in us learning how to be a community, learning how to be a village to one another. Christian hope teaches us that we are all in this together. Everyone has sacred worth and deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. Find hope-filled stories that emphasize the we in the newspaper, online, or in books, and share them with others. Get your eyes and your ears attentive to those stories that stop the us versus them, the blaming, the scapegoating, the victimization. Find stories where human communities came together and there was a we, and there was a birthing of hope injected into the world, and then share them. And then the last one today is Christian hope teaches us that God is the champion of hope. There's always a problem in the church where we ask people to do. This one, I'm simply asking you to open up your hands and receive the gift of hope. Receive the promise that God is the one who began a good work among you, and he will bring it to completion on the day of Christ. When you are overwhelmed by the pain and heartbreak of the world, receive the gift that God has promised, the hope of human flourishing for all. And so remember those great Romans passages that God is the champion of hope. God is the one pushing our world to a new reality, a new world. And if you're in that place, put out your hands this morning or sometime this week and receive that this God will fulfill everything that God has promised. This God will pull you forward into that day of great hope.